Yudzayin Cheshvan, Friday the 15th of November, Rabbi Rashi Simon, silence is golden.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be back at the Torah Way, as always. I'd like to explore together this morning an interesting comment of Rashi, one of Rashi's well-known comments, and maybe because my name is Rashi, I have a special fondness for that that approach. But I want to explore the reason that is mentioned behind the fact that Lot was saved from Sodom. In this week's parsha, we have the narrative surrounding Lot in Sodom, the visitors that first come to Avraham Avinu, then two of them make their way to Sodom as well. And their purpose is twofold. Firstly, to overturn Sodom, to bring about the punishment that Hashem has decided is due to that degenerate and misanthropic society. And the second one is there to save Lot and his family, which of course he does. The question is, why was Lot saved? In what merit? So the Pasuk says, Vayhi b'shacheis Elokim es arei hakikar, when Hashem destroyed the cities of the valley, or the plain, Vayizkor Elokim es Avraham, and Hashem remembered Avraham, Vayishlach es Lot mitoch ha-hafecha. Hashem remembered Avram, and because he remembered Avram, therefore he saved Lot. The implication is that Lot, in his own merit, perhaps would not have been worthy of salvation altogether. And from what the Torah tells us about Lot, he is an equivocal personality. He was the nephew of Abraham, Avinu, and yet his own merit was apparently scant. But nevertheless, Hashem remembered him and saved him. In the merit of Avram, says Rashi, Ma'u zechirasu shel Avraham al Lot? What did Hashem remember about Avraham regarding Lot? When Hashem remembered Avraham, why did he save Lot? Because he remembered Avraham. So Rashi says, Diskar shaya Lot yodea shesara ishto shel Avraham. That Lot was aware when they were in Mitzrayim that Sarah is the wife of Avraham. Vishama shamar Avraham b'Mitzrayim al Sarah achosihi. And he was aware, Lot was aware, that Avram was telling everyone, she's my sister. And Lot knew the truth, and he kept quiet. So Hashem remembered that. This is the recollection. V'lo gila ha'davar, shayachas alav, l'ficha chas ha'kadosh baruch hu alav. Lot was cognizant, Lot was sensitive to the peril in which Avraham would be placed if it was known that Sarah is his wife, and therefore Lot kept quiet, and in that merit, Hashem had rachamim on Lot as well. So this was the recollection. It says Hashem remembered Avram. Hashem remembered the chesed that Lot did for Avram, and therefore Hashem saved Lot. That's how Rashi explains it. The chesed of silence, the chesed that Lot kept his mouth shut when everyone was saying, did you hear about this new family have come to town, brother and sister? And Lot knew the truth and he kept quiet. So the Mefarshim ask about this comment of Rashi. Lechora, the simple understanding of what Hashem remembered about Hashem remembered Avraham, and in that merit he saved Lot. The simple understanding is, Hashem was aware or sort of recalled the fact that Avraham loved Lot. How do we know that Avraham was concerned for the well-being of Lot?
Saved him with.
He took him with. Okay, that's an interesting suggestion. We'll have to get back to that in a moment. But there's a more dramatic demonstration of Hashem's love for Abraham's love for Lot.
He went to war.
When there was a regional war, the first world war that took place, the four kings and the five kings, this was a great regional, the superpowers were waging battle, and Abraham joined the battle in order to rescue Lot. this would lechora be the simple understanding of what Hashem remembered vis-a-vis Abraham and Lot. The Gur Aryeh, of course, is Maharal on his Perush on Rashi. So he says, "V'hiksha hara'im." Eliyahu Mizrahi asks, "My kushi hizos, what's the difficulty of why does Rashi have to say that it was Lot's silence in Mitzrayim that Hashem remembered vis-a-vis Abraham? We know that that Abraham loved him. V'haya ohev lo ad shemasar nafsho alav." Furthermore, the Mizrahi asks, and furthermore, what the gentleman said a moment ago, that Lot accompanied Abraham when he left on this great journey, the beginning of his spiritual odyssey that would take him to the land of Canaan and more. Lot came along with him. So this is another merit of Lot. V'hiniach arso umoladato. This is what the Mizrahi asks. It says, "Gur Aryeh ve'en zekusha." He says, "Ki lo yitachin zechira shel Avraham alot b'chol zeh di'im shum she'akrovah." If we say because he was a relative, so he says an interesting yisod. We don't find that Hashem will save or will bestow a benefit on a person because of his relative. Other than the merits, chus avos, we find that if a person has meritorious parents or ancestors, we have the idea of chus avos, and we have the notion of brahma zake abba, that a son will bring merit to the father, or maybe to the mother as well. But insofar as other relatives, we don't find that the merit of one relative is going to assist another relative. It's an interesting comment that the Maharal establishes. And the fact that Lot followed Abraham, it's not so clear that this is a merit. It says Gur Aryeh, "Ma shehalach imo v'azav arzo lo halach rak letov aso, d'ha kasher yatzu me'ur kastim, v'kach terach es Abraham beno, v'es Lot ben Haran ben beno." Terach is the one who took Lot. Lot came with Terach, not with Abraham. And in any case, according to the Orach Chaim, Abraham wanted to shake off Lot anyway. He was looking for an excuse to get rid of Lot. That's why after they came back from Mitzrayim, and they were all both very wealthy now, laden with livestock and gifts from Paro, so they had sichsuchim, you know, the shepherds of one were quarreling with the other, as the Torah says. And Abraham right away took the opportunity and said, "He pareda me'alai, you know what, let's go our separate ways." So Orach Chaim said, this is very odd. I mean, Abraham just immediately says, move on. It doesn't seem normal. So Orach Chaim says, yeah, because he was looking for an opportunity to move him on. It's just that Abraham didn't want to say from the start, "Lot, get lost." But he was looking for an opportunity when the pretense arose. Yeah, what do you say?
You also see that when he was praying for stone, right, for the Hamishim, he didn't say, "I have a nephew there."
Well, but that presumably that was part of it, like the subtext of it. Rabbeinu Bachaya even says that the reason Avraham, just as an aside, the reason Avraham did not try to negotiate beyond the number of 10, so Rashi has his own explanation, but Rabbeinu Bachaya says the reason Avraham stopped negotiating when he bargained Hashem down to 10 is that he thought 10 people for sure we have. I know we've got 10 tzaddikim there. We've got Lot and his wife. He's got four daughters and their husbands. So Avram reckoned that there were 10 tzaddikim there because of Lot and his family. Which is interesting just parenthetically to see that he was including the women among the tzaddikim according to that reckoning. It was only a havamina, but it was in fact, Lot was not that righteous, his family were not that righteous. What do you say, dude? It's true for the Mabel as well. You do see that same idea with Noah and his family. But the point is that Abraham thought that there were 10 righteous people because of Lot. So presumably that was part of the subtext of it in any case. But the point is that according to our Chaim and Gur Arya Lusu, without saying it explicitly, he says that Lot went along with Abraham for his own purposes. That wasn't such a fantastic sense, a source of merit. So he says that was not a great source of merit. What is the great merit in this silence in Mitzrayim? As we say, silence is golden. So here Maharal begins to use language which I don't exactly understand. There are people here probably more learned than I, but I'll just read a few words of it. In a profound way, Lot has tziruf v'yichus el Avraham. He has a strong connection. He has some kind of bond with Avraham. Even though superficially, we see that Lot separated himself from Avraham. Mikadmunu shel olam, as Rashi says. Yesh bipinimius ha'inyan davar gadol sheyesh lo yichus el Avraham. And the Maharal, in his enigmatic style, repeats these words a couple of times. Now, our good friend Rabbi Hartman, in his edition of Gur Aryeh, has in the footnotes, as he normally does, other cross-references where Maharal develops this theme in other places in other ways. But I would like to suggest an interpretation which is, I don't know if it's exactly the pshat, it may also be derech drash, but whereas the philosophy and the mysticism of the Maharal is beyond my grasp, I'd like to suggest an approach which is derech musar, which I can relate to, and I hope we can all relate to as well. Just to say, because I don't want to tantalize you, what Rabbi Hartman writes in his notes is that the Maharal elsewhere observes that silence is part of the formula for geula, and talking inappropriately is the reason for exacerbating and prolonging the gullus. This is found in what Moshe Rabbeinu says, Halahageni Ataomer, Moshe says, let's take two Moshe, Halahageni Ataomer, and Moshe Rabbeinu says, Achein Noda Hadavar. What does Rashi say on that?
But they're not worthy of being saved.
They're not worthy because of what?
Because of the fact that they...
That's right. Very good. Excellent. The Torah Wave veterans are on the ball. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Achein Noda Hadavar, says Rashi, now I know why they are in exile. Now I know why they are oppressed and enslaved. Because there are people who are Dalhorim, who are prepared to do Mesira, to turn in someone, to denounce someone. Because they speak Lashon Hara, now I know why they're in exile. Says Maharal, from here we see that the restraint that to rein in the impulse for Lashon Hara is the merit for the Geula, and the failure to do so is the formula for the Gullus. So that's one approach to what Maharal is saying. And you see the common feature that Lot was also in Mitzrayim, and Lot was silent, and therefore in that merit Lot was redeemed. This is the merit for which Lot was redeemed from Sodom. Okay, as I said, this is profound. I want to take an approach which is, I think, which offers a very pertinent Musar insight, and that is the following. It's well known, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, that anyone who has three qualities, Harezim Etalmidav Shel Avraham Avinu, Ayin Tova, Ruach Nemucha, Nefesh Shefela. Now, Ayin Tova, we understand, it means a person who is magnanimous, a person whose perspective on others is compassionate, a person who wants benefit for others as he enjoys for himself. It's the opposite of tsaros ayin, which is to be stingy, the person who is self-centered. So this is tov ayin, ayin tova. Now, nefesh, ruach nemucha and nefesh shefela would appear to be quite similar, a humble spirit. So I'd like to suggest the following explanation, which actually is found in the Maharal, and Pirkei Avos says a little bit of this as well. A person naturally is born in a self-centered orientation. This is true for an infant that expects everything, that is completely dependent on those who care for him or her, and this remains the way from infancy to toddler to pre-adolescence, and maybe well beyond also. It's part of the development of a person, part of the maturation of an infant or a child, to begin to think outside himself. Initially, this is the Derech HaTeva. The infant thinks only of itself. Lahavdil, Freud developed this idea greatly as well in terms of understanding human motivation and personality, the ego and the id and this sort of thing. Says the Maharal, this is the nature of a person. He needs to try to overcome that, which some people succeed, and some people don't even try, maybe to overcome the tsaros ayin attitude, in which he thinks only of himself. But this is how a person is born, with an ego. This idea of a nefesh rechava, which is the opposite of nefesh shefela, that's what it says about Bilam. So we all have insatiable appetites. There's a Yiddish expression which is, I have it here in my, I saw someone said a Yiddish expression, I think it's a medrash actually, that every infant comes into the world clutching his hands. And after 120 years, when a person leaves this world, his hands are open. As if to say, when a person arrives, he thinks, it's all mine, I'm going to acquire it all. And after 120 years, sometimes even sooner, when he leaves this world, his hands are open, he takes nothing with him. This is the nature of the human condition. The Tov Ayin, so to render these expressions into English, felicitous English is not easy. My Yiddish is not very extensive at all, but there is a Yiddish term which is to fargin. And we don't have that same expression in English. Even in Hebrew, they have a new term in Hebrew, neologism, lefargin, is a Hebrew form of the Yiddish to fargin. It's an interesting phenomenon. So this is the Tov Ayin, the person who is prepared to give up something for someone else. Avram Avinu had that quality. Was he born with it? I would suggest Avram Avinu was born like every person who comes into this world. But he endeavored to overcome those traits. Of course, Avram Avinu had an ego, but he overcame it. He developed the Ruach Nemucha. And he developed the Nefesh Shefela. These were his spiritual accomplishments. It's interesting, the Mishnah doesn't say that anyone who is a monotheist is a Talmud of Avram Avinu. It's true, Avram Avinu's great contribution, his great legacy to all of mankind, which is very widely acknowledged, by the way, in the world today, he's the father of monotheism. Even the Yishma'elim are very fierce monotheists, and this is to their credit, because they are descended also from Avram Avinu, whether genealogically or ideologically. But it's not enough just to believe in one God to be a Talmid Shel Avram Avinu. One has to have the midos that go with it. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who lived in Lita in 19th century, is said to have remarked, and I'd like to maybe render it into language not language we can understand, but examples we can understand. He is said to have remarked that it's easier for a person to learn all of Shas than to change one midah, to overcome and to transform one bad midah. I would say in Northwest London, it's easier to learn all of Rashi al HaTorah, or all of Ramban al HaTorah, all of Shas, I don't know, that's a bit beyond my grasp. But it's easier for a person to learn all of Ramban al HaTorah than it is to change one bad midah. Chovos HaLevavos says that when a person is eating, the ability to say enough, when he has some food in his hand which he likes, and to put it down, say, I've had enough, that takes greatness. That takes Shviras HaMidos. It's not easy to achieve. In Navaradok, and the yeshiva in Navaradok and the other Navaradok satellites, they used to work on self-transformation. They used to have exercises that they would do in order to inculcate within themselves this ability to overcome a bad midah, to refine and to transform person's midahs. I just want to mention a short story that I remember from many years ago. I was only about 19 years old at the time. And I was learning in the yeshiva in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I don't know how many people here have even heard of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It's down in the Midwest. That's right. Twersky. That's where the Twersky are from. Yanky Twersky is from Milwaukee. Yeah. So I was in yeshiva there, and in the first year of the yeshiva. And the Rosh Yeshiva was, from my perspective today, I'd say he was a young man. He was probably in his mid-30s. And I was learning with him, B'chavrusa. It was yeshiva high, we had a base medrash and a yeshiva high school as well, as they call it in America. Anyway, a boy came in, a teenager, and he spoke to the Rosh Yeshiva in the most insolent fashion, the chutzpah that I couldn't even contemplate. He was a Russian-American teenager from a non-frum family who didn't want to be in yeshiva. So you can imagine the reservoirs of resentment and chutzpah that he demonstrated. And the Rosh Yeshiva was so forbearing. He was so patient. I mean, I thought he would throw him out of the room and throw him out of the yeshiva. He answered calmly, and he didn't rise to the provocation. I said to him afterwards, I said, I'm amazed, you know, that you respond with such equanimity. He said to me, Rashi, when I was young, he said, I had a terrible temper. He said, I was so quick to anger. He said, I once threw a chair at a teacher. So I said, so what happened to you? He said, I worked on myself for years. Musar and discipline and self-control. He said, it isn't easy. He wasn't saying to me, you know, therefore it's okay how the boy speaks. But he had such self-control, the Rosh Yeshiva, to me it was remarkable. When he told me how about his own, you know, childhood, his own youthful impulses, to me it was a manifestation of this quality. So let's talk just a little bit further about why the Maharal says that, or why Rashi says that this was the greatness of Lot. Maharal says that, explains, I mean, this is how I would understand the point of the Maharal, that the greatness of Lot in his silence was that this is a great human temptation. The temptation to reveal a secret is an extremely potent force. If someone tells me something and he says, you know, this is a secret, don't tell anyone. So as soon as I hear it, my lips are on fire. I want to look around for someone to tell. Who can I inform? To whom can I disclose this information? Because I know something that everybody would love to know. Now, if we look deeper at it, what is the source of that motivation? It's because if I have information that others don't have and they would love to learn, it means I'm important. I'm a someone. And people look at me and they don't even know that how great I am. But if I disclose this information, then I'm going to be a celebrity. The temptation is intense. The ability to conquer one's instincts, the ability to transform a natural inborn human quality and to overcome it, therein lies greatness. So Lot, although he was a bit of a Baal Chesed, a bit Achnasas Archim, but remember when they came to Avraham, they were passing nomads. By the time they came to Lot, it says, V'yavo ha-malachim. By the time they came to Lot, they were malachim. So I think any of us would be happy to welcome malachim to our home. in a way we do every Friday night in any case. Shalom Aleichem, Malachi Ashores. So, look, I don't want to denigrate Lot in terms of his Achnasas Orchim. I'm sure he did pick up some of that in the home of Avraham Avinu. But that by itself is not transforming a Midah, is not overcoming and vanquishing a human trait to which we are all prone. The ability to be quiet in Mitzrayim, when Lot was going out to a pub or a bar and he heard everybody talking, hey, did you hear about this new family in town that came from Canaan and they really originate in the Mesopotamia? Wow, what a knockout. You've never seen such a good-looking woman here, and in Mitzrayim you've never seen such a thing. And you know, they're brother and sister, and Lot is sitting there thinking, ha ha, brother and sister, what do you mean? She's his wife, she's his Rebbetzin. You know, I could tell you, but he doesn't. He keeps quiet. And that ability, that demonstrates what the Maharal calls the tziruf v'yichus, the link, the bond with Avram Avinu. He is a Talmid of Avram Avinu in the sense that he has overcome that particular midah. Just want to add that we find, according to the principle of Gilgul, that, or the phenomenon of Gilgul, for those who understand it or subscribe to it, that according to the Kabbalistic tradition, Lot came back as a reincarnation in the neshama of Yehuda ben Yaakov. And it's interesting that in the case of Yehuda, we do find a similar scenario. Although, in a way, technically it was the opposite, where Yehuda spoke up, where it would have been much easier to remain quiet. I'm talking about when Tamar, Hotziruha v'sisareif, and at that moment, Yehuda spoke up and he said, Sadka mimeni, she's pregnant, not hara liznunim, but I am the responsible party. And the willingness of Yehuda to admit his complicity and his responsibility to save Tamar from a fiery death, therein lies greatness, a similar capacity to overcome and to transform a midah, which is a natural human impulse, just to let nature take its course. But Yehuda spoke up and said, Sadka mimeni. And according to this Kabbalistic tradition, Yehuda, who had the neshama of Lot, came back again as a descendant of Yehuda, and that is Boaz. And of course, Boaz, his hour of greatness took place late at night when he was lying in the threshing floor and nobody else was around except for a young woman who appeared at his feet. And what temptation would there have been? And Boaz resisted at that moment as well. Again, it doesn't take a lot of imagination to recognize the almost, I won't say superhuman, but the, maybe we would say the fully developed spiritual awareness, the capacity to withstand the natural human temptation under those circumstances. So this, I think, sheds new light on why Rashi tells us the greatness of Lot. Hashem remembered Avraham, and therefore he saved Lot. Says Rashi, because Hashem remembered that Lot was silent in Mitzrayim. So this is how the neshama of Lot reached its final tikkun through the rectification of Yehuda, who said, Sadka mimeni, to the rectification finally of Boaz, who overcame that natural human temptation. 6 weeks ago, approximately, we said in the Piyutim, in the Nyomi Noraim, Tole Aretz al Belima. So there's a famous medrash which says this is a person, refers to a person who holds his bolem pig b'shas meriva, who is silent at the time of a quarrel, who doesn't rise to the provocation. Again, this is the greatness of a person, quietness, to be silent in a time of provocation and temptation is a great achievement. And it's not only then, even to talk during davening, again, the temptation can be intense. I think I've made my point. Yeah. Silence is golden. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Back to Anucha. So we are in Hilchos Shabbos, and the question which we pose is, are you allowed to phone?